everyone, welcome to Twig 260. We've got a surprise returning host. So with me today is, well, the usuals. We got Philip Black, game economist at Game Economist Consulting.
Hey, hey.
Eric Kress, principal at Gossamer Consulting Group.
What's up?
Jen Donahoe, strategic marketing consultant at Beta Hat and Jade Inferno.
Howdy, everyone.
And we've got Ethan Levy, co-founder in Stealth Mode.
Hello.
Welcome
I'm
back.
Alive.
Mishka this week is slushing it up at the biggest boondoggle of the year. I've never heard that word before, but apparently.
You don't know boondoggle?
No, what is a boondoggle?
Oh, we need to have a whole podcast on that. How? Okay. All right.
Is this like this is a boomer thing?
I don't think the kids use the word boondoggle.
And then you've got me, Senior Director of Product at Big Fish Games and Laura Taranto. So Ethan, what's going on?
Hey, I'm alive. I still exist. I'm still making games. I saw Mishka was out and I finally had a chance where I could fulfill my backup host duties. But I've been running this startup for about 6 months now and not a single person has told me to shut the fuck up. So I thought I'd come back on DOF and get the humbling I need to do my job. Not ready to reveal what we're doing at Stealth Company yet. And, you know, really, pardon me, I'm like, I was looking at the news this week. I really picked kind of a lousy week to return to the podcast.
This is as bad as it gets, dude. Yeah. This is as bad as it gets. It's almost December, dude. Nothing's happening.
So I'm just here for zingers, I guess. But all I can say out there is it's super fun building games, but attempting to raise money is tough. I have a deeper empathy than I've ever had for all the CEOs I've ever worked for, all the entrepreneurs in the audience who have raised or are attempting to raise at a difficult time or really any time, because this shit is hard.
I hear you on that, having been at a startup recently and now doing my own thing. So I think I would like to shill for a little bit for us. So earlier this week, a part of the Twig cast completely took over a data AI webinar. It was called Navigating the Future of Gaming. It was Mishka, Kress, and me. Poor Lexi from Data AI didn't know what she was getting into when she had all of us on. And we also had the infamous other grumpy man, Brett Nowak, joined us as well. And so it was fun listening to Brett and Kress fight for pretty much half the episode. Although everyone gave a lot of really good information. Everyone prepped. They'll do a rebroadcast of this. So check it out if you want to see those two guys fight. It's pretty fun.
For the record, he was totally trolling me, right? Because he totally agrees with what I'm saying. He was just trying to be counter so I would go off. So anyway, Brett and I see eye to eye on this stuff. I don't know why he was being argumentative, but...
Oh, it was fun. It was super fun.
All right, we got two corrections this week. So in last episode, Kress mentioned that the PlayStation Portal, which is their new release, needs to be on the same Wi-Fi as your home PlayStation. That's apparently incorrect. You just need to have the portal and the home unit connected to a good Wi-Fi connection. To be fair, it's been really confusing about how it works.
I looked into this and you're totally right. You could use any kind of Wi-Fi, even your phone Wi-Fi. But if you're outside of your current network, it takes like a few minutes to connect. And then the connection is so shitty. Like you're not going to be able to play anything but like an action game. So I was looking at some of the reviews of it. It's a great piece of kit, dude, but like it's primarily used locally in your home.
This is actually why I came on the podcast today, because I want a PlayStation Portal and it is sold out. I am not the only person in the world who demands to do their AAA gaming while laying down in bed with the screen a few inches away from your face. So it sold out too quickly for me to get one. The reviews say it's exactly what I want. I cannot wait to have a PlayStation Portal.
How is coming on the cast going to get you the portal?
It's not. It's
oh, okay. A, you know, like, how are those 2 points related?
No, I just wanted to talk about it because I'm the PlayStation hardware stan of the group.
I mean, Jen's been trying to get Ubisoft codes forever and it hasn't worked.
Yeah.
I got the connects for both of those things. I'll see if I get a portal. Portals will be available, dude. The initial demand is high.
I've got my Amazon points ready. I'm going to buy one as soon as it's in stock.
I don't know if it's a correction or an update, but some very credible sources have told us that developers are now able to move over about 50% of their payers to use web shops like Exola or other web shops. We need to keep this in mind as we discuss decreasing revenues on some of the top titles from key publishers like Supercell and Scopely, because when we look, sometimes, I'm not sure Sensor Tower or Data AI, they capture off-platform payments.
And one other data fact. So I talked to Kress Huish. That podcast will be coming out maybe next week. And so what he said is that of their top 100 clients, I think 11% of their total revenue is made up by web shops. So just a couple of data points, Chris, I know you're going to have some feedback here, but I think there is a point that some of the revenue is moving off platform and we're not able to see that when we evaluate games and how they are ranking in, you know, the top revenue rankings coming from Data AI. Now to you.
Oh, that was it? That was all you had?
What do you mean that was all I had?
I thought you were going to do more. I thought you had something else insightful.
I have lots more. We'll save it for the podcast that Chris is on.
These are the type of methods of like look over here type thing. Because at the end of the day, look, I know the web shops are a good way of maintaining margin. But the fundamental problem is that if you can't acquire new users, you can't grow, right? And so this does not help the user acquisition problem at all. Except for it saves money, in which you can spend more money on acquisition. But even then, you're spending more money on acquisition that's not as effective, right, for the games that you're making. So I could not believe Marvel Strike Force is down like 50% from its highs. Like no amount of money on the web shop is saving that game, you know, in terms of where it's at, right? So just a look over here thing, right? This does not solve the user acquisition problem. And that's the biggest problem in this market right now, in my view. It's not maintaining margins on existing games, you know, regardless. And the 50% thing is from Mishka too, which is always suspect because, you know, it's just like, that's a high percentage, let me tell you.
But there's another component here, which is that a lot of these games are going native on PC too, which makes it far more likely that you're going to opt into the web shop because that's how you make a payment on a native desktop application. So if you're playing Star Trek Fleet Command on desktop, which they have, it's a native SKU, you don't need to use BlueStacks, you're going to use the web store to make an IAP. And so if you see more games going to native PC SKUs, I think you'll see higher web shop conversion. But like those two things are tied together. And I'm not quite convinced it needs to solve the user acquisition problem because IDFA should have been an increase in CPIs, right? It should take relatively more dollars to acquire a user. But that's a one-time level increase. It's not as though CPIs are continuing to increase. It should be a one-time shift. And so maybe those margins are healthy enough to solve the user acquisition problem or to account for the changes in IDFA. If you're really making that much more margin, if that margin is greater than the increase in CPIs, maybe the math works out. Now, don't get me wrong. I agree with you, Eric. I don't think the math actually ends up working out in the end, but there's still something to it. But it is returning fire. It is back against the evil that may be Apple.
This is true. It is a counter to Apple's evil ways.
Actually, later on, I can answer a little bit about how CPIs are trending and Scan 4 and Scan 5. I have some data that's been reported, so we'll wait and get into that later. Okay, quick hits. Here we go. So I have a lot of crazy data popping up in this section, so bear with me. So there's a new report from Nikko Partners on the China market. So China's gaming market will generate $47.8 billion in revenue by the end of 23, representing about a 5% increase year over year. Half of the Chinese population now play games, with the Chinese gaming market set to surpass $57 billion by 2027, representing a five-year CAGR of 4.5%. So, Chris, I thought we talked about China. I mean, it's been down this year, but this new report looks like it's on fire. What the hell's going on?
Dude, I swear to God, Nikko are rock stars at this shit, right? They have proprietary data that no one else has, but App Annie has the mobile market down almost 20% year to date. So I'm not really quite sure how this is going to foot. I know PC and other markets in China are doing well, and maybe that's what it is. They're moving from mobile to PC, and I know Steam is doing really well right now with third parties. Like, that's part of the reason a lot of these guys are performing better. But there seems to be a disconnect. I would like to see what Nikko is estimating for mobile and why that differs from the data we're seeing from App Annie. Obviously, App Annie only tracks iOS, doesn't track Google or doesn't track all the other stores. So maybe that's part of it as well. But there is somewhat of a disconnect here.
Cool. All right, I'll send you the link. So highlights from a Misplay mobile gaming loyalty report, 77% of spenders on mobile games rotate between 2 and 7 games at any time throughout the week. And of those, half only spend money on one game. And so, you know, it leads me to believe that people play a lot of different games, but they go deep in one game. This point was interesting for ad creative. 72% of gamers value seeing actual gameplay footage and ads when deciding to install a game. About a third of players ignore mobile ads. 26% actively pay attention to ads no matter what type of game is advertised. We actually talked a lot about fake ads on that data AI webinar. So using actual gameplay footage seems to be what players want, although I would kind of argue that point, because when people vote with their clicks, that's not actually what always wins, even though that's what people say. So I think this is an instance of what people say and what they do are two different things as someone who makes these things. 72% of children are seeking video game gifts for the holidays, according to the ESA. Look at the ESA, like, putting something out. I was excited to see something from them. And this was the biggest no-duh data stat I've ever seen this year. So 3/4 of all kids want a video game? No shit.
I was pretty excited to get the new Bluey game for my kids for Hanukkah, but then the reviews came in that it was disappointing for the whole family. Bluey's a fantastic show, and it deserves a video game worthy of the Levy family. Didn't get one this year.
Maybe Stealth Co. should go make some kids games for the Levy household.
Are they using survey data for that, or are they tracking the letters to Santa via USPS? Just curious.
I think Santa is reporting data with an analyst, and they're calling Phil to make sure that the survey size is correct and that they're averaging all the data correctly.
It's the new sensor tower product, Santa Spy.
All right, final point for me. NVIDIA says that its operating income grew more than sixfold from August through October to $11.5 billion. Thanks to the explosive growth of generative AI, everyone short that stock. It is overvalued. My wife has now become a day trader, by the way. This is her new hobby since the BMW is in the shop getting painted. So now I know all about shorting stocks. By the way, that is not advice, and you should not actually take any advice from me.
I literally just bought NVIDIA yesterday. I sold all my losers like Unity and GDEV and everything I had that was down 90% and took what was left and put it into NVIDIA.
You're a total mush, dude. So yeah, that's actually an indication that you should short NVIDIA, because yep. Anything made by Mishka.
Because I sold all my SPAC losers and got into NVIDIA.
The fact that you were in those stocks to begin with, that's an indicator you shouldn't even touch them.
Every one of them, there was a time where I could have sold it for at least a 20% gain, and I didn't. I held on to it, and it was a mistake.
Okay, yeah. I think Jen's right. Short it.
Short it! The anti-Levy ETF says short NVIDIA.
All right. TikTok maker ByteDance plans to wind down Nuverse, and no surprise given what's going on. To be clear, they were the ones that published Marvel Snap, and they assured the audience that Marvel Snap will continue to operate and flourish regardless of changes to the publisher. Anyway, I met those guys. They're really good guys.
Yeah.
I don't know if it ever made a lot of sense to do publishing in gaming, but, you know, TikTok's a great platform. They were trying to get more aggressive and build something to rival Tencent, and it seems like that is not going to happen.
I saw a stat that the gaming revenue was only 1% of ByteDance's overall revenue, and it was just such a small thing and probably just not worth the headache to them. And they're like, in Kress's terms, this is mice nuts. This is smaller than mice nuts.
They got bigger fish to fry, right? They're dealing with like all kinds of geopolitical problems. So they, you know, let's just focus. Also, though, it could have been a way of diversifying revenue. But anyway, I never really understood it to begin with, although those guys were really cool. All right. Supercell backed Helsinki studio Papukia. I don't know what that is closing after 3 years. The goal, I guess, was to reach non-gamers who might want to play games from books, movies, and social media and other hobbies and stuff like that. So more of, a casual strategy, but they're shutting that down. Oh, we just heard that Unity is laying off 265 people from the Weta FX partnership.
Two separate things. They're laying off 265 and also dropping the Weta partnership. So it's not clear that all those that were laid off were involved in whatever the Weta partnership is.
Oh, I see. Okay. What's really crazy about the Weta deal is that they funded it with convertible notes. And I think it was Sequoia that secured these convertible notes. So the real loser in this situation was Sequoia. And in actuality, John Riccitiello did a really good job of offsetting the risk of this transaction, which at the time, most investors thought didn't make any fucking sense, right? They were basically buying this high-end 3D modeling thing for visual effects, right? And they're trying to get into that market, et cetera. But the deal was just kind of structured all wacky. So anyway, this is not a surprise. This is not a core asset that made any sense back then, and certainly doesn't now given all their challenges. more Embracer layoffs. Jesus, Embracer is just, I hate to be right about this, but Jesus. Fish Labs and Free Radical Design. I think Free Radical Design does Time Splitters. Is that the right?
Yeah, they were revived to bring back Time Splitters, and they're shutting that entire studio down.
Rest in peace.
It's really sad. It's just kind of disgusting what Embracer did. This was always a preordained situation that was going to happen. You know, it's all kind of Lars's misleadership in terms of acquiring all these assets that he couldn't possibly manage. It's kind of gross. And it's going to continue until, I don't know, these guys could go out of business for all I know. They may not be able to pay back their debt. They have no capability of making games anymore. So anyway, we'll see. Quickly on the investments in M&A, Sony and NCSoft announced a strategic partnership. And this press release,
what?
Dude, it was like, it wasn't ChatGPT. It was like legally bullshit that said absolutely nothing for an entire page. But nonetheless, the notion here is that NCSoft actually may be working on a MMO with one of Sony's IPs, which is actually quite cool. And I'm totally forgetting the name of the IP, but that would be cool. That would be cool. But if it's mobile or anything else, it's all dumb.
I think the press release said mobile. I was hoping for that Ratchet and Clank MMO I've been dreaming of.
Not shut the fuck up, Ethan.
That's what I came for.
Yeah,
you finally warranted a shut the fuck up on that one, dude. No, Horizon. Sorry, they're thinking about
Horizon.
A few years ago, they announced that they were looking at the partnership to do a Horizon MMO, which would actually be cool. But we will see. We will see. And then Rockstar vet Dan Houser. Now, this is actually, I was wrong on this one. Dan left Rockstar a few years ago. And his brother, obviously him and him, started Rockstar. Now they're starting a new studio, Absurd Ventures, which is not what I expected. I thought he was retiring, but now it seems like he's starting his own thing and probably stealing a lot of people from Rockstar, which is not good for Rockstar. So we'll see what happens there. All right, Phil.
On the game side, Jujutsu Kaisen Phantom Parade reaches number one worldwide revenue last week with around $30 million in revenue. This is from Cyber Agent, the makers of Umamushuma Pretty Derby. This is the infamous horse racing girl game. Yes, which continues to rake in cash week after week. Looks like they're expanding here. Jujutsu Kaisen is an anime that recently launched in Japan. Lethal Company, the co-op horror shooter, is still inside of Steam's top 10 by revenue, jumping from spot number 8 to spot number 4. This is one we've been tracking for a little while. Bungie is delaying the next Destiny expansion, The Final Shape. Destiny 2 is at its lowest player count since it launched on Steam with around 300,000 DAU. Vanity Fair had an exclusive behind-the-scenes look with pictures of the Fallout TV series coming in April next year. Yes, this is actually happening. And Jonathan Nolan, the brother of Christopher Nolan, who also created Westworld, is helming it. So make that of what you will. Playrix has soft launched Familyscapes with the underutilized family theme we saw in Wonder Blast, which I know Jen loves so, so much and adores. Space Ape has revealed that BeatStar has done $125 million in its 2 years since launch. And ads have accounted for about 35 to 40%, just eyeballing their charts. I highly recommend checking out this post that Space Ape did. They were extremely open with their data. It was what looked to be screenshots directly from their Tableau dashboards. Love, love to see that. Beyond Good and Evil 20th Anniversary Edition spotted on the Xbox Store. A remaster is the excuse I need to return to this absolute classic. I did not write that. I'm not returning this classic.
I wrote that. This
Who
is
wrote
mine.
That?
Beyond Good and Evil is a cult classic. Everyone should play. Buy this remaster. It's the Legend of Zelda open world game that you never played. It's amazing.
Now I remember why Ethan was so fun on the podcast. My eyes are rolling in the back of my head constantly.
Yeah,
you're killing me here, dude.
Historical Professor Ethan, who gives us the entire history of the video game industry, things we never knew about, pop up.
Neither do we know about it, do we care about it, right? Like, I mean, come on, dude. It is a cult classic. It is beloved by few, but the many don't give a shit. How about that?
Well, how about we talk about a game where the many do actually love it, Laura?
All right, so following last week's episode on Monopoly Go, I wanted to also talk about this game because June's Journey has also reached a $1 billion revenue goal. So congratulations to that team. It's a great hidden object game. And What I wanted to talk a little bit about was the hidden object genre in general, because sometimes it's a little bit overlooked, especially when you're talking about match three games. If you look at the market, it just don't earn as much revenue, but there's actually a lot on offer. Hidden object, we've all played them. Pearl's Peril was the predecessor to June's Journey. There's a lot of work that goes into them. There's a huge content pipeline, which also leads into the fact why a lot of people don't go into them. But June's Journey, Pearl's Peril have incredibly high quality art scenes, which take so much time and effort and cost to create. So a little bit of history. Playrix, initially, I don't know if everyone knows this, but their original games were hidden object games. So before they got into Match 3, they were experimenting with hidden object. So take that bookend. What they've done is they've actually gone full circle, because they've been releasing not only Familyscapes, but they've also been releasing hidden object games and then experimenting with different ways to combine them with different types of gameplay. So Manor Matters and Mystery Matters are both games that have hidden object scenes. So Mystery Matters is a match three with hidden object mini games, lots of mini games. And Manor Matters is actually a true hidden object game that adds very puzzle inspired gameplay to the levels, which is a completely different approach than June's Journey or Pearl's Peril, which is very much focused on finding the objects as quickly as possible, using those bonuses you get for finding objects quickly to progress through the story faster. So I think the question is, like, what makes jumping into this subgenre interesting? It's expensive. The scenes have to be beautiful, otherwise they won't perform. You already have some people that are dominating the market. You have Playrix going in. I don't know. My hypothesis is there is an overlap between hidden object and match three. That was my thesis when I was looking at, do I make games in this area? And if the company can, or your studio can afford the production cost, it can be quite lucrative. Not as big as Match 3. So like, I was looking just briefly, it's $360 million a year, hidden object market size versus, you know, Match 3 Metas, which is closer to $5 billion. What I try to think about is one approach in entering Red Ocean, if you're looking at hidden object or Match 3, is carve a piece out, take a bet on a smaller subgenre. If you can introduce a hit and displace a current market leader with something, with especially a space that hasn't innovated in a while, it can be super, super interesting. Anyway, just a little update on June's Journey. Congrats to that team, big milestone.
Since I'm here, I brought some props to give some historical precedent to your points around merging Match 3 and Hidden Object. So 20 years ago was when I was working on Hidden Object games back in the days of casual downloadable PC games. I was working at the Big Fish competitors, Play First and iWin. Right here is a sealed copy of my first big failure as a lead designer, The Mystery of Shark Island. The Mystery of Shark Island was imagined as a Mystery Case Files competitor. Mystery Case Files was Big Fish's big brand in the hidden object and just dominant for years in the hidden object space. That game was a classic case of innovating in the wrong direction. But I actually do believe I was the first or one of the first to merge Hidden Object and Match 3 when I was working at iWin on this one, Jewel Quest Mysteries Curse of the Emerald Tear. That was a hidden object game with Match 3 mini game after every couple of levels and a deep story written by yours truly. And that was actually my first hit game as a lead designer. And what's really funny about that one is before there was live operations, we used to sell these games for $20 a pop. All they had to do was take my game design document, I'd already left the company, and just give it to other outsourcing firms. They did like 7 or 8 versions of Jewel Quest Mysteries after I left. That was like a live ops before live ops was a thing. So one, that was just fun. I like bringing out my Mystery of Shark Island game whenever I can, because it's a big lesson learned on that one. But probably the more important point to the people who actually make casual games and listen is that, you know, before there was casual mobile, there was casual downloadable on PC, and there's precedent for almost every hit game and hit genre that we see on mobile. Not everything. I can't think of any precedent for Coin Master, for instance, but obviously before there was Candy Crush, there was Bejeweled. Before Gardenscapes, there was a game that combined Match 3 and a base-building decorative progression element called Cradle of Rome and Cradle of Persia. Before June's Journey, there was Mystery Case Files, and before Cooking Madness, there was Diner Dash. And actually, again, on the merge, before there were, what's our popular Merge game now? Merge Mansions, Merge Dragons.
Merge Dragons, Evermerge, yeah.
There was Triple Town from Spry Fox, which was kind of an interesting case of an indie studio making a brand new puzzle casual mechanic. But basically, I guess what I'm saying is if you want to make a new casual hit, like the once mentioned The Matchlorette, just look into my brain. I know where all the casual hits are.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
Matchlorette, yes. Mystery of Shark
you
Island,
you actually made
no.
a really good point, but you had to ruin it. You had to ruin it. Ruin
no, The
it.
Matchlorette's great. I love that game. I love the
no,
game.
Look
I started designing
brain?
In my head. Yeah.
No one wants to look in your brain, dude. No one wants to look in your freaking crazy brain, dude.
The new one is the Golden Matchlorette.
The Golden Matchlorette. I cannot wait to make the Golden
oh
Matchlorette.
Oh my God, for
Do not
70.
Ask the question. Don't keep them going. Don't let them go.
Can I just say, we need to take this segment and actually, we need to put the video out. And all people need to do during this entire segment is watch Cress's face. And it is freaking gold. So I'm going to figure out how we can do that.
You should see me in the data AI one. I was losing my goddamn mind. And I was getting pinged from people saying, oh my God, you're doing it again. You keep rolling your eyes. Like if they were just sending it to me, I'm like, shut the fuck up. Mishka's driving me insane right now.
One more screenshot.
This is another embarrassing game I worked on, but this one was financially successful. Polly Pride Pet Detective, another hidden object game. You can make them with really high quality art. At the time, you could also like churn them out with kind of garbage art for $40,000 a pop and have B-level hit. It was fun times.
So fun fact about June's Journey and Pearl's Peril, it is HD quality graphics, not HD in terms of console, high definition. They are beautiful.
All right, well, let's continue with your market analysis because we have to be clear on how small this market opportunity is for June's Journey. Because
it is small.
Yes, unfortunately, this game is super successful, but there are very few that are even close.
I think it's tough, right? Because everything looks small when you compare to Match 3. Like everything looks small, but anything over 100 million can be a really great game. You know, if you build it over time and it's not one of the ones that, you know, piece that was removed where what it, everything dies after 3 years. If you invest in live ops and you approach it, you can actually build quite a good business from it. And that's what they did. That's what June's Journey did. They kept investing. They innovated. They do have some really interesting social mechanics that I haven't seen in other hidden object games. They kept at it. It was great.
The games industry is experiencing unprecedented growth, with global revenues projected to reach a staggering $268 billion by 2025. But with more players than ever connecting across platforms and devices, how can your game stand out against the competition? AppsFlyer has created AppsFlyer for Games to help you unlock your players' true LTV by providing a wealth of game measurement solutions, unique industry insights, and proven best practices. Our dedicated hub is packed with innovative products, industry partnerships, and unrivaled expertise to ensure your game brand adapts and thrives. We understand that every game is unique, and AppsFlyer's data-driven insights allow us to cater to your specific needs. We know that in today's evolving landscape, staying ahead of the curve is crucial. Trust in AppsFlyer for Games to guide you through this exciting journey. We have the tools, the knowledge, and the passion to help you succeed in this ever-expanding landscape. Together, we'll conquer new worlds, both real and fantasy, break records, and create gaming experiences that leave a lasting impact. Get in touch with AppsFlyer for Games today and unleash your game's true potential. AppsFlyer for Games, supercharging the gaming landscape.
This episode is brought to you by Data AI. Yes, they were called App Annie back in the day, but let's not talk about that. Let's talk about how Data AI is the first company to combine consumer and market data with the power of artificial intelligence. And Data AI does this to unlock unique consumer and market insight to accelerate competitive advantages across all digital channels worldwide. What we here at Deconstructor of Fun really like is Data AI's Game IQ tool. It's this fantastic market and competitive intelligence tool for mobile gaming that allows publishers to really get to the feature level of a game without doing the full-on deconstructing first. Using this tool, your team can quickly tie features to performance KPIs, which will help you make difficult roadmap decisions. It's also a great tool to identify hidden growth opportunities as you can analyze games on a scale. As you well know, there are hundreds of thousands of gaming apps in the App Store and thousands of new mobile games released each month. And while we don't want you to stop reading and listening to Deconstructor Fun,
The fact is, we can't cover it all. With Data AI, and especially their Game IQ tool, you'll be able to efficiently determine what features provide a lift, make roadmap decisions based on accurately modeled expected outcomes, discover how competitors lifted performance through feature releases, benchmark performance against your competitors, focus with confidence on the highest potential genre for a new game release. We here at Deconstructor Fun are huge fans of Data AI. So what are you waiting for? Go to Data AI and try the service for free.
All right. So in honor of Ethan's return and his history with Web3, let's talk about the Game Awards. So it is from a website called game.gg, but the E in game is a number 3. As a marketer, I'm like, why on earth would you do this? This is like the hardest thing in the world to tell somebody what it is. Anyway, all right. So they have a final shortlist of games for the Game Awards 2023. It is the biggest Web3 gaming event and a live stream on December 14th of 2023 for the second year. This is actually the second year that they've done it. And there's a prize pool of $2 million. So that's not bad. And voting right now is open until December 1st. Hopefully this podcast will drop by then if you want to go in and vote. There are a ton of categories. I just pulled out the Game of the Year, the final nominees, Parallel, Big Time, Dead Drop, Wild Card, and NFL Rivals. What is pretty funny is someone who was going through and voting on all of this stuff, they asked me to be a jury member, which is exciting and thrilling because I don't know anything about Web3. And as I was looking at these games, not many of them are actually like live.
This could not be more Web3. First of all, the jury is like bizarre. Like a lot of it is vested VC interests who have investments in half these companies. So the jury's already cooked. So then you look at like the nominees, and most of these games are not even games yet. They're just selling NFTs. So Parallel, one of the nominees you mentioned, was in beta like a week ago. So no one's really gotten their hands on it. Big Time has just been selling NFTs right now and is in closed beta. Dead Drop, now that is the one from Dr. Disrespect on Twitch. That's been around for over a year and has gotten 2 updates in the last year and is by all accounts an absolute fucking shit show. No one is playing that. It's a complete and utter disaster. All they sold is NFT access passes. They don't even have NFTs in the game. It's supposed to be an extraction shooter, by the way. Another extraction shooter. So that's been an absolute disaster. Wildcard is a MOBA, so that's instantly discounted from any sort of legitimacy. And then there's NFL Rivals for Mythical, which is nearly dead of all like the sports product. I mean, I guess it's a real game, but it's completely outclassed by EA's products. It is barely hanging on, and I'd be surprised if it was here another year. Couldn't be more Web3 in terms of nominees. So I guess it's appropriate is what I'd say.
All I can say about Web3 is that my mood day to day has improved meaningfully since I acknowledged that I got Web3 completely wrong. And I quit and I sold all my tokens and I unfollowed every X and LinkedIn Web3 influencer except for one, friend of the podcast, Chris Heatherly. Chris, we are rooting for you and your in-development game to win the Web3 Gamey Awards next year. We're rooting for Chris Heatherly.
So, here.
The jury is cooked. Jen's on it. She's voting for you next year, Chris.
For sure. If they ask me back after this podcast.
Oh my God. Yeah, I don't know. I don't really have any comment. Where's Serrare? Like,
it was in there. So I actually voted for that for best sports game just because I didn't want to vote for listen, NFL Rivals on mobile, it works. You have the teams. I just, for some reason, have the hardest time actually playing the game itself. Like, I feel like an idiot. So I voted for Serrare and we'll see what happens. I think that the Web3 community doesn't like the idea of what it is. And they want more. I don't even know what they want because the games in there were all just bizarre.
They want profits. That's all. They want to extract value. So let me just close out this segment by saying, Cress, you were right.
Wow.
And I was wrong about Web3. No players. People just want to extract profits. Remember, buy that anti-Levy ETF. Always bet on Cress.
Yeah, no, shut the fuck up. Keep talking, yeah. Levy. Keep talking. Keep talking truth.
I think Chris is going to want Ethan to come back on every podcast now if he agrees with
that's
him.
That's right.
All right, well, let me just close this one out with a few slightly positive things about this. Award shows are great. We love that they celebrate the industry and new and unique areas. Maybe some feedback in a growth-minded, oriented way for these folks, for them not to be memed to death by the community. I think they were getting a lot of shit because a lot of the games aren't out yet. How about we focus on games that are in open beta or that they're live And if you don't have enough games to fill the categories, let's shrink the number of categories and then like really have it be something meaningful. All right. So now moving on to lots and lots of live games. Cress, I think you have the state of the industry. Let's hear it. After you did all the prep for the webinar, dude, like let's actually use it on our podcast.
Yeah. By the way, the webinar was interesting because data AI, there was no data. Like I was the only one that brought data and I was a last minute addition. It seemed like no one was looking at data. They were just looking at sheer speculation. But anyway, whatever. All right. Again, this is a bit premature. Obviously, we have data through the end of October. So this is not the full year numbers. Honestly, I don't expect things to change all that dramatically in November, December. We'll see. But we were light on content and we just did this for data AI. So when in doubt, recycle, right? Okay. Current state of the market. So overall, the market year to date, according to data AI, is down about 1% worldwide and down 1% in the US. But behind the numbers, really, it's like a tale of winners and losers, right? And as always, in the last couple of years anyway, from a geo perspective, we saw that South Korea and Taiwan were up almost 20%. These markets are clearly different animals altogether, and they're kind of like bucking the trend around the world, to be honest. And the bigger surprise for me, because I don't really quite understand why, but Germany, UK, and France were up high single digits. Maybe there's more attention to these territories because US and Canada is such a shit show with UA. Anyone have real insights here as to why these markets are growing? Because I looked at like what's going on in the markets. Germany is in recession for the first half of the year. UK economy is really struggling. And France is fucking France, right? So like exactly why these ones are growing, I don't know. But I think it's kind of further evidence that macro is not really a driving factor in mobile, as some would argue.
I've got a theory on Korea and Taiwan and Japan and similar, is that very high density places where traditional open air advertising.
Outdoor advertising.
It works. These are markets that are not reliant on IDFA, not reliant on performance marketing, use traditional advertising forms, and the players in these markets love high ARPU games, you know, mid-core gacha games, etc. So that's my theory.
These are gems! These are gems, Mr. Levy! Why can't you always have these kind of gems? Why does it have to be muddled with a bunch of shite, right?
I love gacha, and I love talking about my weird games and weird PlayStation.
And you love out-of-home advertising. So just as the marketer on the podcast, out-of-home advertising absolutely works in a number of countries around the world. It does not work in the US. So just to be clear, it works in high-density markets, high-density areas where people are walking to work, they're going on the subway. Subway advertising absolutely works, especially in Japan. I did it for one of my games. Ethan is right.
Yeah, like Nikkei, Goddess of Victory, which is like one of those games that does decent here in the West, but like hundreds of millions of dollars. I think it's done over $1 billion in its first year, maybe. Wasn't that a recent story? Like that's a game that they advertise a ton of in the subway.
Still doesn't explain Germany, UK, France. I'll wait to hear some feedback on that. The biggest losers are China, which is down 19%. What we talked about earlier, the Nikko said the market's up over 5%. So I don't really understand that. US, Japan, and Canada are all down, but only by 1% or so. And then the biggest loser is clearly Russia, which is down like 56%. But that's for obvious reasons. Anyway, so looking a little bit further, because it's actually more important for me anyways, is what's going on with the genre stuff. Because part of the thesis is that with challenges with UA and targeting, that the core would be impacted more and that casual would become more of the growth vectors. And that's kind of what's happening from my assessment of the market. The genres that are up are the party genre, which is where data AI through Monopoly Go, and then match is up 14%. Party's up over 106%, right?
Yeah. I think Stumble Guys is in party as well.
Okay.
So they put those kinds of games. But yeah, how is Monopoly Go not social casino?
It's hybrid.
Ugh.
I'm glad it's out of casino.
Well, it does cloud the numbers.
It would cloud the numbers because it's definitely more of a broader market than just the casino games.
So I just took a look at party on Data AI quickly. It's Coin Master, Monopoly Go, Eggy Party, Dice Dream, Stumble Guys. Trivia Crack is also there.
Can you tell me what unites these games? What unites them? What makes them party games?
I think they need a separate classification.
I think it's a catch-all.
It's straight up social casino. I don't understand why this is so complicated. Eggy Party, Stumble Guys, those are party games. I don't get it. This isn't that hard. And it does counteract the thesis too. It does counteract the thesis, right? It was always about, hey, look at post IDFA, everyone's going to go super casual, and social casino should have been the genre that's most affected by IDFA because their LTVs are so deep. They're the deepest in all of mobile. They have the highest LTVs. So they should have been most impacted by IDFA.
That's exactly why they didn't want to classify Monopoly Go as social casino, because it's not social casino. It's far more casual than social casino.
The IP is casual. I think it might be fair to say that. Like, the IP has broad appeal, but the genre, all of the KPIs, how this game monetizes, it's exactly like social casino. It's going to have similar LTVs. And I think that's because of the IP, though. They went broad on the IP.
CPIs are not nearly as high as social casino. I don't know. Coin Master's same. I'm actually kind of glad, because it kind of isolates this group and it makes the casino games look the way they should look, because everyone is suffering on the casino side. Poker, slots, everything, right? It's a disaster, right? Anyway, so we'll continue. You know, Sensor Tower actually puts them in social casino. So these are the only genres that were actually up, just to be clear, right? So actually, without Monopoly Go, and I hate doing this, I don't generally do this, like, the market would have been down like 4 or 5%, right? So year to date, Monopoly Go is a huge driver of the market this year. From the decline perspective, RPGs are down 8 or 20% in the last 2 years. Strategy is down 10% this year, down 18% over the last 2 years. Simulation is down 25% in the last 2 years, which is scary.
Would you say simulation is down 25%?
Yeah. Just comparing 2021 at the peak to 2023 year to date. And then casinos down 6% or 16% in the last 2 years. And the biggest loss comes from shooters, which is down 27% year on year and down 50% over the last 2 years. Jesus Christ.
Well, isn't that because Fortnite's not on mobile anymore?
Fortnite wasn't on mobile in 2021. Maybe everyone's playing console now or something. I don't know. I realize what a shitty experience it is to play fucking shooters on mobile. So anyway, I think the thesis is generally holding is that the casual games that require less targeting are doing better than the core genres, while the cost of acquisition continues to go up for that.
I had a quick look to see how social casino was classified. And the way they view it is, it's so silly. It's all work. It's just like categories. But they take slot anything that's in a casino, like a slot machine, and then if you bring it to mobile, then it gets classified as social casino. So it's all of the slot machine casino-based games. I cannot picture Monopoly Go as a game in a casino. You just wouldn't have it, right? It wouldn't exist.
But to Philip's point, I mean, Monopoly is one of the biggest licensed IPs in the fucking casino.
It is. Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything. Like, just because you can license it doesn't mean it's like, it's an IP that works. You can license it in other ways too, right? So I'm trying to break it down to the game mechanics about how we would classify certain game mechanics that would fit into social casino versus not.
Whether or not the player has agency and can develop strategy. And you can't do that in Monopoly Go.
That's the one part I can't remedy. I understand it's casual. I understand it has social casino elements, but the more I play it, there is not a lot of agency in the game. That's what makes it hybrid for me.
Yeah.
And this is where social casino is going anyways, which is adding more meta features around just pulling the lever.
Yes.
Right.
So they're meeting in the middle.
They are meeting in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is smart.
That's for sure smart. I think that's the future of this category, is more of this, you know, the asynchronous gameplay meets this like no agency gameplay. Like, you're going to see hybrids just coming out. I mean, if people aren't already working on hybrids, they should be.
Hey, game devs. Are you tired of dealing with complicated payment processes all over the world? Well, Exola's got your back with Exola PayStation. It has a simple, user-friendly interface that makes it easy for players to pay for your games and in-game content however they want. And because the Exola PayStation user interface is adaptive and accessible on smartphones, tablets, and PCs, your players will have a seamless experience no matter their preferred device. Players can save their favorite payment methods for future purchases, and on mobile, even charge purchases directly to their phone carrier bill. On the back end, you can customize your checkout with game-specific integration options like sidebars and iframes, as well as change colors, fonts, and images to make PayStation look and feel like a natural part of your game. Ready to see Exola's PayStation in action? Visit exola.pro/payments-dof or visit the link in this podcast description.
I wanted to talk to you about Heroic Labs. Building a successful game is hard enough without worrying about building your own game tech as well. Heroic Labs provides a comprehensive game stack to help you get your game into market faster and scale beyond the competition. With their Unity game framework Hero, you can cut development and prototyping time in half and quickly add social, economy, and reward systems to grow your game. Satori, the LiveOps platform built specifically for the games industry, lets you run live events, A/B tests, deliver dynamic content to players, and always keep your game growing. Nakama, the industry's leading open source game server, lets you develop locally, providing all social and competitive features for your game, and then seamlessly transition to their Heroic Cloud hosted service and easily scale to meet the largest of audience demands. Find out how to get started at heroiclabs.com.
Okay, from a publisher perspective, obviously the big winners are obvious to anyone that follows this industry. Dream is up 112% year on year. Scopely is up 55% this year, and Playrix is up 28% this year. So, and despite all the success of both Dream and Playrix, fucking King is flat and likely up with ad revenue. Like, King is a fucking juggernaut. Yeah. Like, hats off to those guys. It's like remarkable that they've grown through this shite that we're seeing out there and all the competition that's been thrown at them constantly, right? The biggest losers, to nobody's surprise, is Zynga is down 21% this year, down 34% from 2021. Fun Plus is down 22%, down 37% from 2021. Tencent is down 19%. Stillfront is down 18%, down another almost 40% from 2021. Yeah, these publishers are struggling.
Is that revenue or stock value?
No, revenue.
Got it.
But stock value is worse, probably. So looking forward, kind of part of what we talked about, data AI, like what's going to happen over the next 2 years, I suppose. I think the biggest challenge is the same thing I talked about last year in Istanbul, right? The yield curve is basically flattening for the overall market. Or to put another way, the quality of downloads is getting lower and therefore the revenue is not growing as much as the downloads. And so ultimately, customers are spending less, right? Or they're moving into genres which spend less. So from going from strategy to puzzle, as a consumer, you're spending less per spender. But again, the quality of downloads are going down because targeting is becoming less effective. And because we've seen steady growth in the yields over the last decade, right? But all of a sudden, once IDFA comes out, those yields start to decline, right? So it's pretty self-evident to me that Apple is really the culprit to all this. And then not only that, the IDFA headwinds continue, but then we should remove fingerprinting in Q1 of this next year, which would result in further declines in quality of downloads. And then Google will start implementing their things. Now, their thing's going to be a little bit more friendly, but they still will remove fidelity and move the market more casual because targeting is going to be really challenging for the core. So I think we have 2 more years of declines. That's kind of what my conclusion is. Like, we'll see a decline next year. I don't see any big games this year until this morning when we started talking about the new, Playrix game, that game, see if they can scale that. But we have a real tough comp with Monopoly Go, clearly, for next year. And I don't know of any other big titles that are big releases that are coming out next year. The real macro problem starts to happen in the next 2 years as well is that people are starting to pull back, right? So they're cutting people, they're cutting capabilities, so they're going to make less games, and less games come to the market. And it's kind of this domino effect. And I think that could actually cause some serious problems too going forward because we'll just see less product.
I'm more worried, like, we are going to see less games. I'm also worried we're going to start to see less interesting games in terms of innovation. We're just going to see more what we would call a quote unquote safe bet that's not actually safe, but instead of doing larger step change of changes, you're just going to kind of innovate slowly and then you're going to be seeing more of what we already see.
Let's be clear on this point.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if I've made this point many times. I think this is part of what Brett was giving me a hard time about, but I would argue that we haven't really seen any real innovation in the last, like, maybe 8 years in the space. I mean, since the only game that was really innovative that I can think of off the top of my head was Pokemon Go, right? Like, that game.
How about
was
Fortnite? That game came out in the past 8 years and created a new PUBG and Fortnite together.
Yeah. Battle Royale.
Fall Guys.
PUBG made like $10 billion on mobile.
I'll concede that too. All right. Maybe not 10 years is a bad one because those games just came out of nowhere too. But from a genre perspective, if you look at casino games, puzzle games, strategy games, even RPG games, like, they're all basically the same game being recycled plus ones, right? I think we have talked about this on the podcast before. Like, when industries mature, genres become relatively stratified, and that's what people play, right? Because that's what is optimized around the platform in which you are consuming content.
What about Phil's favorite hyper-casual category? Don't you love hyper-casual? Isn't that innovative and unique that they are completely like one-touch games where it's a game just to deliver ads to you? Come on, that's like completely innovative.
You're not playing
innovative
My Perfect Hotel, man. Gotta get into
that's
it.
That's just gross.
I know. Listen.
So anyway, I agree with you. I mean, I think that's exactly what's going to happen, is that we're not going to see any innovation in the space. There's not really much investment going into the space. But what I do think there is opportunity is the fact the market is absolutely massive, right? You build a game that makes sense for this market that we're in now, not market that we had like 3 years ago, right? Mishka brought up some like analysis from 2014 on the podcast in Data AI. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, we're not in that market anymore, right? That market is gone, right? Brave New World.
Also, sorry, one other thing, like Grid Merge, that was completely different. That was 2020. Tile Match is completely different. These are all new engine mechanics that have come out.
Tile Match has been around for a while, like a long time.
It's like Mahjong that's been, anyway.
Ethan mentioned at the top of the hour, though, like these games are always in a conversation with themselves, and each person has less to add to the conversation than the one behind. Like, we see this in every field of knowledge, is that progress starts to slow down as we start to refine more and more of the genre. And if the next game can't solve a problem that the last game introduced, then the game isn't going to succeed. But I don't think it's fair to say there's been no innovation. I mean, Warcraft Rumble, that was something new.
I think this is more predicting what's going to happen with the, if everything's going to slow, where's the comfort level of studios taking risk and trying something different? I mean, most places have a green light process, right? So especially bigger companies, like you just, it's harder to get funding for things that don't have a, you know, some sort of quote unquote guaranteed P&L case for it, where you're going to verify, oh, this is going to have great ARPU and this is going to have the best DAO and we're going to get everything because, you know, this is all going to work. It's just, it never works that way. It's the weird stuff, the different stuff that ends up, I think, changing things for the better, except that is expensive, that is time consuming, and that is risky.
I'll just say this. Look, I think once we come out of this, that the market will kind of reset itself, and then the opportunities will present themselves based upon what you can actually market in this world, right? When fingerprinting is removed and Google comes out with this, we don't really even know what the UA landscape is going to look like, right? It could get worse. Maybe it could get better, right? Maybe Apple gets their shit together. SCAD starts to work better. Who the fuck knows, right? But for now, yeah, the next 2 years are going to be rough. It's just going to be a real challenge in the market, generally speaking.
Yeah. So speaking of those SCAN changes, and this ties in a lot with where you were going, there was a report coming out from AppLovin subsidiary Adjust has released a new report with TikTok providing insight into the scale of iOS scan network campaigns for mobile marketers. Let me preface this and say the data coming out is not horrible. It's not awesome, but it's finally just data to understand what scan network is doing and providing. So if you don't already know, scan network is the network that iOS allows you to do to target iOS users. Scan has really, you know, honestly sucked. They're on scan 4 and many people have not even adopted it. Many people decide not even to go after players on iOS because they don't want to implement scan network. They don't want to deal with all this. So here are a few takeaways from the report. The takeaways, you should just implement scan 4. It's been out for a year. It came out in October 2022. So there's no excuse now unless you're just waiting for Scan 5. Scan 5, I'll talk about it in a second, probably isn't due out till Q1 though. So Scan 4 decreased the costs per acquisition while increasing conversion rates with evidence of scalability on iOS. So that was good news. Now, here's kind of the data set, because I know Phil's going to be like, well, what was the data set? So TikTok ran some tests and had great results to support implementing it. They looked at 37 apps in TikTok's beta testing in the UK, US, and Japan, determining how Scan 4 elongated a 35-day attribution window that affected conversions. So 17 of these 37 apps were actually gaming apps. So yes, it's only 17 apps that this data came on. And not all of the data that they're aggregating here is on gaming. TikTok's overall cost per acquisition improved by 37%, and conversion rates improved by a massive 220%. So again, I would take this data with a grain of salt, knowing everything that we just said. But okay, so Scan4 doesn't totally suck is my kind of takeaway. And if you aren't trying it, you should. So Scan5, the next iteration of this, will support measuring re-engagement. So now you can see postbacks if a player has already installed your game. Eric Seifert is probably dancing a jig right now. The fact that there is, like, we are making marketing improvements in Scan and how it's coming out. So this should have been rolled out with iOS 17 back in September. They held it. So when I look at my Magic 8-Ball, I think this is going to come out in March. And I think this is going to tie into what we talked about earlier or in other places. I talked about it with Chris on the podcast. In Europe, there's something called the DMA, and this is the Digital Markets Act. And so this is legislation that is putting more pressure on companies for anti-competition. This actually leads into iOS 17.2 having the potential for sideloading on iOS devices, which is pretty remarkable and crazy because Europe is putting pressure on companies to kind of open up their walled gardens a little bit. My guess is all of this is tied to probably March of 2024. This also, to your point, Chris, coincides with when Privacy Manifest comes out and the removal of fingerprinting. Ironically, the parent company of Adjust is AppLovin, who you always kind of go after for being some of the biggest offenders of fingerprinting. So, Chris, the new news here is that Apple Scan Network has finally spit out some data. It's not earth-changing. I don't think this fundamentally changes the post-ATT challenges that we live in. It's especially true since Scan's been out for over a year. So I just wanted to cover this so that everyone knows. For non-UA people, you can be a little bit dangerous. And if you want to sound like a genius, just go up to your UA person and say, hey, I heard that in Scan 5, we can get postbacks for retargeting. Is that true? And they'll look at you like, oh my God, yes, you're crazy. So if you want to sound smart, there you go.
Yeah. I was hearing that the postbacks were delayed a certain period of time, which makes them less impactful to making real-time decisions, but
yes,
that may change since then. I don't know.
So yeah, that is true. So in the current version, the postbacks come much later, which doesn't allow you to have a really good kind of attribution window. By the way, the same problem exists on PC and console if you're trying, you know, to do things. So the other like epiphany too is everyone's running to PC console thinking the world is better over there. And it's actually more archaic than even what we have available today on mobile. So you don't get like some magic answer by going to PC and console. Scan 5 promises and hopes that these look back windows start to come in a little bit. This is the biggest problem with the Scan networks and why people are like, fuck that. Is the attribution window is so big. They're like, how do I know that that was actually, and no one wants to wait for that data because you cannot optimize like you used to. So we used to be able to turn knobs on a daily basis. Like our attribution windows used to be so short. When I was at Scopely, I think we had them even closer in than 7 days. And we kept shortening and shortening because people on mobile directly like download and you start playing almost immediately, you could shorten that window. Scan just keeps it really long.
And this is what kills me because we're still in this fingerprinting world in which that's how they're doing this attribution, right?
Or some other versions of it.
If you're removing fingerprinting altogether, in theory, right, then the results, you have to go to the Scan network that has like a week delay or 2 week delay or something. Like your fidelity is going to get so much lower if they actually go through with the removing the fingerprinting. It's going to be,
yeah,
it could be dramatic. It just depends on how aggressive they get with the people that are cheating out there.
It does depend on that. You know, I bet they're going to have companies pop up. And when the Privacy Manifest comes out and you have to disclose the SDKs that you have in your app, you know, and so if some reviewer, we all know the review system at Apple is awesome. And if you don't want your app rejected, you're probably not going to be putting some of these SDKs into the system that are going to get you kicked out. So the hope that everyone has is that Scan keeps shortening the look back windows so that Apple can start to allow you to do this. Now, the workaround and what everyone's doing is doing Apple search ads because Apple has their own data, which is why they're the number one network. When you look up on Apps Flyers Index, they're the number one network. Google has all their data. That's why Google, you know, Universal App Campaigns is the number one network in the Apps Flyer App Index. So the other thing that people are doing is first party data and collecting their own information. And like, you can only do that and set that up if you're one of the bigger guys. it's so much time. Like having a MarTech network and ad tech platform that allows you to do that is just so massive.
I have to go back to the network of UA people and get an update. Ah, fuck it. I'm going to wait till next year because I need to know what the hell is happening with these privacy manifest shite, if they're actually going to execute against that and enforce it. So
yeah, I don't know folks at like AppLovin. I was talking to some other folks at other companies prior to this post. So maybe we should just call Mr. Seaford and see if he wants to come in and do an update with all of his network.
All right, guys, until next week. I doubt there'll be more news, but hopefully there'll be some more news to talk about. Likely more layoffs at Unity and Embracer. We can talk about that every week, probably.
Yeah.
My cats are getting cute.
Anyway, it was good to have
Ethan
on.
Even cuter.
Wait, what? A cat update. Cat update.
Oh, shut the fuck up. All right, good looking out. We'll see you guys next week.
You did it. You made it to the end of the episode. As a fan of the show, it would help us out if you subscribe and leave us a review on the podcast service of your choice. More importantly, are you a member of the Deconstructor of Fun Slack group? If you have 5 years or more of games industry experience, go to deconstructorofun.com/slack and apply to join. Join the games industry's best professional community, filled with peers always willing to lend a hand. Or subscribe to our newsletter to get all the latest insights from the Deconstructor of Fun content creators. Thanks for listening.